A deep dive into the world of financial advisors.
There are these folks who have some savings, but it's not so much that they have the luxury of making mistakes when they get to be age 65.
You can get financial advice from a banker or a money manager, but what if the money manager works for the bank? Who are you really dealing with? Your financial advisor should know a lot. But who teaches your financial advisor?
Think about sitting down and explaining it over a cup of coffee. Be that personable. How would you tell somebody who's your friend?
Plus, what does beekeeping have to do with financial advice? This is The Language of Business, a weekly podcast to inform and inspire entrepreneurs and anyone thinking about a startup. Learn about strategies that work and strategies that don't work. I'm executive producer Don Kelly. Our host is Greg Stoller, Harvard MBA and senior lecturer at Boston University Questrom School of Business. On this episode, we take a deep dive into financial advisors. Here's Greg Stoller.
Thanks, Don. How much do you want to know about the management of your own money? And who is ultimately responsible, you, your advisor, or the government? Scott Stathis knows a thing or two about this. He's the managing director of Stathis Partners, and welcome to The Language of Business.
Thank you.
So why is the Department of Labor getting involved with money management?
They have been all along, but not from an individual investor standpoint, from a company standpoint. So if you work for a company and you have a retirement account with a company, the DOL is involved.
Why wouldn't an advisor always do what's in the best interest of a client?
Exactly. Good question. An advisor's compensation varies by product. So in theory, an advisor may have some products that if they sell those products, they get compensated more than if they sell other products. And so there's an undue influence in theory, right? Because different products have different commissions. And there's reasons for that. Different products are more difficult to monitor and explain, et cetera, right? So if you look at flat fee advisors, fee-based advisors, advisors that are working based on a retainer like an attorney does, there are not many of those. Those are the advisors that are least affected by this.
In the bottom line, is it going to make for better money management?
Possibly. There are a lot of unintended consequences of this regulation. It will increase costs in the business. It will reduce the ability for your average advisor to work with your middle market client. A lot of smaller to mid-size investors, talking about amount of investable assets, they're going to lose their advisor because it's impossible with all this new regulation. There's a compression pressure on fees and on compensation, and there's an increase in costs. So the profit margins are really going to be squeezed. Your average advisor is not going to be able to work with your average client anymore because it's not going to be profitable. It costs money to provide investment advice. So they're going to go to the higher net worth individuals. The average investor is going to be pushed to a self-service model or a call-in model and not have access to a live person other than on the phone. We've seen this happen in other countries already, so the UK and Australia as well as Canada. And there were a good percentage of people that lost their advisor, and there are a good percentage of advisors that left the market.
Scott, thank you.
You're welcome.
Scott Stathis, managing partner of Stathis Partners.
You can get financial advice from your banker or a money manager, but what if the money manager works for the bank? Who are you really dealing with? But first, what does beekeeping have to do with financial advice? As The Language of Business deep dive into financial advisors continues.
You look to your money manager to give you guidance on your investments, but who's advising them? David Macchia is the founder and CEO of Wealth2K, and welcome to The Language of Business.
Good to be here.
How does Teach the Teacher work?
Financial advisors are skilled. They deal with people and help them accumulate money, always. But when people's needs change, when they move from that time of life where they've been accumulating savings to now having to turn it into sustainable retirement income, many financial advisors are not expert at that function. So my company comes in to provide them the tools, the software, the educational training that they need to successfully guide clients.
Is that an age or an experience problem or something else?
It's a convention problem. Advisors are taught early on to maximize someone's growth of capital. But when you get into the challenge of turning capital into income, new skills, new insights, new investing methods are needed.
Do they implement 100% of your recommendations?
Most advisors will follow the core recommendation, which is that if you're working with the type of investor who gets to retirement with savings, which is great, But the amount of their savings is not so much relative to the amount of monthly income that they need to create. Then they need a very special type of investing methodology. And they do, in those cases, recommend what we prescribe.
Are you the only person providing them counsel, or are there other people involved as well?
Well, our firm specializes in this. It's a growing, but still a new business. Because what happens is when you make this change, when you move from accumulating your assets to distributing those assets, to turning those into a sustainable monthly income, you have to be more focused on risks that can devastate retirement security. Like, what happens if I pick a bad year to retire, like 2008? Or what happens if my income doesn't keep pace with rising prices? Or what happens if I live longer than I expect to? Could I outlive my income? Those kinds of concerns and risks need to be mitigated in a financial strategy that retirement income advisors are getting more and more skilled at.
Isn't that something a good advisor should be able to find out on their own, though?
Not really, because that's not part of the standard operating teaching of a financial advisor. Again, they're more focused on accumulating money and asset allocation. But once we get into this changed idea of turning assets into income, it really requires new methodologies and new thinking.
Do you have a new fiduciary responsibility as well?
We're not deemed to be the fiduciary because we're not actually the ones investing money for a client, but we're providing the framework, the idea and the intellectual framework for them to be able to do it properly. They in turn will be fiduciaries to their clients in all cases.
How much of what goes on behind the scenes actually gets dispensed to the individual consumer?
Well, like any business, there's a behind the scenes, there's a backstage and a front stage. I think what consumers will have their interests served, the best interests of the consumer will be served in all cases. That doesn't necessarily mean that the financial advisor dealing as a fiduciary with an investor will be providing the best representation of their needs when it comes to retirement income.
But there are several links in the chain. It goes from the DOL to you, to the advisors, to the clients themselves.
Well, it really goes from the DOL to what the DOL deems as a financial institution, and those could be broker-dealers, they could be banks, they could be registered investment advisors, and the client. But in all cases, the financial advisor dealing with the client is going to have to observe the investor's best interests.
What keeps you up at night about your clients?
What keeps me up at night are millions of Americans that I would call constrained investors. There are these folks who have some savings, but it's not so much that they have the luxury of making mistakes when they get to be age 65. People have to be really careful about how they deploy their money. And if they're not careful, one of these risks that I mentioned earlier could really derail their financial security. So they need special handling, and that's the thing that worries me.
David, thank you.
You're very welcome.
David Machia, founder and CEO of Wealth2K.
You can get financial advice from your banker or a money manager. But what if the money manager works for the bank? Who are you really dealing with? But first, what does beekeeping have to do with financial advice? As the Language of Business deep dive into financial advisors continues. Our sponsor is Art Lifting. If you have a small business, or even if you run a Fortune 500 company, you can uplift the look of your office with Art Lifting. Art Lifting has over 1,300 artworks in a variety of styles and prices. You can buy them or rent them and switch them up on a rotation every month or so. But wait, there's more. All of the Art Lifting art is by artists who are homeless or dealing with disabilities. So you not only brighten and uplift your office, you're helping local communities across the USA. To learn more and view the collection, go to artlifting.com. You can get financial advice from your banker or a money manager. But what if the money manager works for the bank? Who are you really dealing with? But first, what does beekeeping have to do with financial advice? As the Language of Business deep dive into financial advisors continues. Here's Greg.
Thanks, Don. People might be people and be the same all over the United States, but is the culture and legality of their money management so? JP Pomprion is a financial advisor with Salem 5 in Hampton, New Hampshire, and welcome to the Language of Business.
Thanks for having me, Greg.
So how does the culture and legality of money management differ across state lines?
Well, to a large extent, it doesn't differ, mostly because people are largely the same from state to state. New Hampshire or any of the other states I serve, people are more concerned about the questions that they're coming in with, the anxieties and the goals that they're trying to achieve, than they are about the laws. But there are certainly some technical differences. New Hampshire has no income tax, has no estate tax. Those things make a difference in the planning work that we do. But the laws themselves largely are at a federal level, some state laws, and they're very similar state to state.
How many states do you service?
I've lost count, probably 15 to 20 states. I tend to move with my clients as they move over time, so I've got clients as far as Texas and Florida and California.
Any changes in culture of money management?
The culture's definitely changed, and I think changed for the better. And that's an exciting thing to see when you've been in the industry for a while, because the direction the industry is going is actually ahead of a lot of the regulation. And I think it's moving in a direction that serves clients better, serves them with more transparency. And I think the clients understand that and appreciate it and are responding to it.
In preparing for this interview, I noticed that you are a beekeeper. How do those lessons relate to your day job?
Surprisingly, there is some connection between beekeeping and my day job. For the most part, it's become an entrepreneurial lab for my children. They learn about business, they learn about money management, and what I've done is mostly act as a teacher and advisor. And that part has translated to the work I do with my clients, where it's a lot about teaching them and coaching them and helping them understand what's going on with their finances and helping them understand how they're going to achieve their goals.
But are your clients looking for you to be their coach and their cheerleader as opposed to a more traditional financial advisor?
Well, there's certainly an element of coaching involved, because a big part of the work is really on my clients' shoulders in terms of what they have to do to be successful. And then on my part, for the advising, they want that too. They want somebody who's going to be professional, who's going to understand how to help them with the investment decision-making process and the planning process, more importantly. So there are elements of both there.
How do geopolitical events like Brexit affect your clients?
Well, they affect them in large part through creating some anxiety, and that's certainly an issue to be addressed. The real effects long term probably aren't there at all, but the 24-hour news cycle does create a little bit of a problem where instead of having a hourly news where you could actually get some information and some understanding, now it seems like it's more about keeping people glued to the TV.
How have you seen your client base change over 20 years?
Well, the client base has by and large aged with me. My client base is a little bit older because I'm older than I was 20 years ago. And I think that you tend to bring in clients who are, at least to some degree, similar with you. They have a connection either by age or by interest. And so the age range has migrated as I've migrated up the age range.
Have your perceptions of money management changed along with them?
Well, for myself, they've certainly changed because I've become a little bit more conservative as I've gotten a little bit older. But I'm careful not to project that on my clients. In fact, what my clients are looking for is to make sure that I understand what their risk comfort zone is and advising them according to their needs and their objectives, not mine.
JP, thank you.
Thank you, Greg.
JP Pomprion, financial advisor with Salem 5 in Hampton, New Hampshire.
You can get financial advice from your banker or a money manager. But what if the money manager works for the bank? Who are you really dealing with? As the Language of Business deep dive into financial advisors continues.
What's the difference between a banker and a money manager when your money manager works for a bank? Sean Tesoro is the president of Salem 5 Financial, and welcome to Language of Business.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So what is the difference?
The difference is we're in a world now where people's relationship with money is not just saving or investing. There's a combination of those things that happens for almost all customers. So the value of being with a bank is that the bank has an opportunity to broaden that relationship on a variety of financial needs, not just investments, but savings, deposits, mortgages, insurance, a whole host of financial needs that the customer is after.
But what do you say to a client who says that they don't have a specialty, they're a jack of all trades and a master of none?
The way that the organization works within our financial institution is that we have specialists in each one of those areas. So we have a specialty in investments, we have a specialty in financial planning, we have a specialty in banking, mortgage, insurance, across the board. So it's the combination of having access to all of those services in one place that helps to uncomplicate finances for an individual customer.
What is your competitive advantage compared with other banks trying to do the exact same thing?
The primary competitive advantage for us is that Salem 5 is a mutual bank. Mutual banks are not publicly traded. We are technically owned by the depositors, so we don't have a lot of the external pressures that public banks have. That gives us a lot of flexibility to be able to only serve what's in the best interest of the customer.
And is the best interest of the customer coming from the research from LPL Financial or you as president of Salem 5 Financial?
It's really coming from a combination. We take advantage of the research that is done by all of the research staff at LPL. We take advantage of research staff of our own advisors, CFAs and CFPs that are within our group. And then we combine that to create individual recommendations for the customer.
Is it possible to be a Salem 5 Financial customer without having a banking relationship?
Yes, you have both options available. So we have some customers that come to us just purely for the financial planning need, but we have other customers that will come to us through the bank, and it's really the combination of those pieces that gives us a unique opportunity.
Having so many branches throughout Massachusetts, is the type of investment advice going to differ depending on where the branch is located?
No, really what we see, it's based on the need of the customer and where they are in their life stage. So there are five or six different financial needs that every customer is going to experience at some point in their life. So it really has more to do with where they are in their own financial journey rather than the location of where they are.
How do you keep current on investment trends being the president of a division?
You have to take it from a lot of different sources because the information comes at you fast and it changes constantly. So a lot of that we rely on getting from LPL. We get that from other divisions within the bank, and we do a lot of our own independent research as well.
Do you still have individual client contact these days?
I have individual client contact through my advisors, but I don't have individual clients myself. My charge is to help build the division for Salem 5.
Sean, thank you.
Thank you.
Sean Tesoro, president of Salem 5 Financial.
You can get financial advice from a banker or a money manager, but what if the money manager works for the bank? Who are you really dealing with? And how is a mutual bank different? And what's the marketing advice for a financial advisor as the Language of Business deep dive into financial advisors continues?
On this episode of The Language of Business, we looked at money management from several different perspectives. Communication strategist Jennifer Powell, from a marketing perspective, what advice do you have?
View this as an opportunity to reach out to your clients and your customers to build your name, your recognition, and your expertise. Have a plan in place on how you're going to get the message out and what you want to say. Think about what your clients need to know. What sort of questions should they be asking? How is this going to affect their business and what changes do they need to make? And think about how do you explain this in terms that make sense to them.
Is this over a period of months or years?
This is most likely going to be over a period of weeks, immediate. You're going to need to include this in a lot of your literature that you're sending out to them. And then in addition to that, you have opportunities to push this out on your social media, LinkedIn, your blog, your own website. Have a plan on how you're going to do that so that you're not wasting your time and your resources.
How transparent should the money management firms be?
As transparent as possible. These are your clients. Think about what you would want your friends to know and your neighbors to know. And when you're talking to them and you're talking about this, think about sitting down and explaining it over a cup of coffee. Be that personable. How would you tell somebody who's your friend?
Jennifer, thank you. Jennifer Powell, communications consultant.
Thanks, Greg. We publish a new episode of The Language of Business every Tuesday. We're available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and TuneIn and Google Play and Stitcher or just say, Alexa, play The Language of Business.
Searching for latest episode of The Language of Business. Here it is from my cast.
We have downloads in 21 states and now in 24 different countries. Ukraine and Portugal are the latest additions. Thank you for the support. If you haven't subscribed yet, please do so. It's free and there's no obligation. Our director is Mark Mandel. Social media by Jennifer Powell of ExcellentWriters.com. Consulting producer is Helen Tierney of Happy Accident Productions. Audio editing and voiceover by yours truly. Special thanks to Mike Carruthers of SomethingYouShouldKnow.net. For Greg Stoller and the entire team, I'm executive producer Don Kelly. Thanks for listening to The Language of Business.